Mike Day has spent his career inspiring people to learn about and to connect with our world. As an IMAX documentary filmmaker, his work has taken him to some of the world's most interesting and photogenic places, like the world's tallest sand dunes in Namibia, tuna auctions in Tokyo, active volcanoes along the Ring of Fire, and even to Jane Goodall's primate research site in Africa. Mike's concluded that one of the best things we can do for ourselves is to travel outside of our comfort zones and let it broaden our perspectives. Mike writes about his experiences in his book, The World Has a Big Backyard, and he joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves. Mike, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Rick. It's a privilege to be with you.
You know, you start off in your book with a quote from Anthony Bourdain, and the quote is, "Travel isn't always pretty, it isn't always comfortable, but that's okay." Why does this quote resonate so much with you?
Well, you know, in writing this book, it's certainly the memoir of all of the great travel experiences I've had producing documentary films and shooting in the world's largest film format, IMAX. But the book has a purpose as well. And what was great was my publisher, the company Wise Inc. in Minneapolis, they publish books with a purpose. So they believed in my purpose, which is simply to create a journey of self-development for the reader of the book to inspire them to have a mindset for more interesting and authentic travel experiences. Or as I ask, why go to an amusement park when you can go to an erupting volcano? And I think this is very much in line with what you have sometimes said is your mission, Rick, which is to equip Americans to venture beyond Orlando.
Yeah, I was just, as I was reading through your book, Mike, first of all, I thought, well, this is a great collection of travel experiences. And then I thought, it's also a kind of a philosophy of travel book. And the more I read it, the more I realized it was really both. We're kind of birds of a feather that way. I joke, my favorite towns on the Italian Riviera are national parks where nobody can change any of their buildings. And that means there's no comfortable hotels. And that's good news because it keeps away the most obnoxious slice of the traveling public, people who insist on good hotels. Anthony Bourdain was talking about that. You're talking about it. It's a takeaway we get from good travel. And you're talking about looking at culture shock as something that is not to be avoided.
Right, absolutely. And I understand that, you know, travel can have a great deal of uncertainty, unpredictability, uncontrollability. So I also, at the same time in my book, try and give people tips, things that I have learned along the way that will help them have those authentic experiences and deal with that uncertainty and unpredictability.
Okay, a good example of that might be Cuba. You've done work in Cuba. You made an IMAX film set in Cuba. How did that put you into a world of uncertainty where comfort is not always king?
Well, the thing that I've learned most importantly is to have respect. Have respect for the place, have respect for the people, but also remember to have respect for yourself. And that means taking care of yourself, not just your physical needs, make sure you get enough rest, drink enough water, but you also, of course, have emotional, spiritual, and social needs as well that you'll want to take care of. So example, emotional. I always say, and I say this in my book, practice mindfulness. In other words, suspend your immediate judgment. Don't overreact. Simply unlock your curiosity. And another tip, don't fear wrong turns, because as you know, Rick, some of the best travel experiences are those that are completely unplanned.
You know, speaking of mindfulness, you wrote that you found a moment of mindfulness at a bullfight. That's an interesting place to find a spirit of mindfulness. Tell us about that.
Yeah, what happened was I was with a group of industry people, museum people from around the world, and we were being hosted by the museums in Valencia. They took us to the bullfights. Many of those in attendance, like myself, were from the U.S., and we had never experienced a bullfight. And of course, after the first bullfight, and as is always the case, the bull loses the fight, you know, it can be quite disturbing to people. It's a bloody, kind of gory activity. And many of the people from the U.S. said, "I've had enough," and they got up and they left. And that's where I, at that moment, said, no, practice mindfulness. Suspend your immediate judgment. Don't overreact. Unlock your curiosity. Stay in your seat. And the people that remained, I found to be some of the most interesting people that I was actually traveling with. And it led to all sorts of interesting things after that.
And you don't need to embrace it. You don't need to endorse it, but you can experience it. That's not sinful, you know,
and it can change you.
Yeah. We're getting an extra large view of the world with film producer Mike Day right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Mike's a former museum executive, and he's collected lessons and stories from his world travels in his book, The World Has a Big Backyard, Adventure Travel Stories from an IMAX Documentary Filmmaker. Mike's film titles include Tornado Alley, Jane Goodall's Wild Chimpanzees, and Ring of Fire. His website is mikedaytravels.com. Mike, I love nature documentaries. I can just watch them forever. And you've done some nature documentaries. I don't think your viewers often appreciate the difficulty that goes into making a good nature documentary. What are some of the challenges that you wish the people who just sit there relaxing and enjoying it should appreciate?
Well, they're especially challenging if you're shooting in the world's largest film format, IMAX. Fortunately, now we have converted from shooting with film to doing it with digital cameras. But boy, in the early days, IMAX, the cameras were big, the cameras were noisy, the magazines only held 3 minutes of film. So imagine that, you know, you're shooting underwater, as we did for a film entitled Search for the Great Sharks. You shoot 3 minutes of film, then all the crew members have to come topside. The camera has to come topside. You have to take the camera out of the underwater housing. You have to carefully unload the film, carefully reload the film back in the underwater housing. Everybody back in their scuba gear, back in the water. And, you know, some things you just have to wait. You just have to be patient. And that's, I'm like you. I watch documentary films and I just applaud them because I can see the patience and the time that has been required to capture what you're seeing on the screen.
I have a sense that you and I are about the same age. We've been filming about the same amount of time. And hasn't it been a beautiful window to see the technological improvements that enable us to do our work now compared to when we started?
Yeah, the digital format is great. I mean, we used to, of course, have to rig up IMAX cameras, the film cameras, you know, with mounts on helicopters, and you had to work so hard to make sure it was stabilized. Yeah. And now we can take those smaller digital cameras and put them on a drone, and we just get magical footage now that we just couldn't get in the past.
Can you, for people that have heard the word IMAX but don't really know what it is, tell us just technically, what is IMAX film? And then also tell us the business model. Is it only in certain theaters? Is it then seen without IMAX in any old theater? Is it a booming business, or is it fading away as we go from broadcast to streaming and so on?
IMAX stands for Image Maximum, and it was a group of Canadians out of the Toronto area that first created the format. World's largest film frame, 10 times the size of standard 35 millimeter. So there was a whole lot more information on every frame. One of the keys, though, was to make sure that as you were filming or projecting, that each frame was in the same location as the frame before or the frame after, because you couldn't have any jitter because you were magnifying the image more than 500 times.
Oh, so you're magnifying the detail as well as the jitter. So if you got more detail, you also have more jitter.
Yeah, and you have to avoid that jitter. So the quality of the film projection was just superb, nothing like it. Well, today, and thanks to some film directors, primarily Christopher Nolan, who is always shooting still with IMAX film versus IMAX digital, we have evolved to where there are now more than 1,700 theaters worldwide. There's been great growth in China and in India, more than 1,700 IMAX theaters. But it has to say IMAX for it to be a true IMAX theater. And it's not only big screen, high quality imagery, but the sound systems are outstanding. You're going into a theater now that has 12 different loudspeaker clusters. And just as IMAX engineered the cameras and the projectors from the ground up, their sound systems are all original design from the ground up.
I hadn't thought about that, but if you're going to get great visuals, you want great audio also. That's part of it, apparently.
Yeah, if you talk to anybody in the IMAX business who works on the audio side, when they hear somebody say, you know, it's 75% image, 25% audio, they'll say, no. It's at least 50-50 audio and imagery. And it is both. And it is what's remarkable about the IMAX experience.
So an IMAX production is more expensive, I would imagine. And the market is, it sounds like it's smaller. You have to really commit yourself to a destination if you're going to choose to make an IMAX production there. What's your thinking about looking for a location that merits IMAX coverage?
Yeah, pre-planning really helps to have a successful production, but looking for that subject and that story that works on a giant screen. So, for example, one of the last films I did is a film called Ancient Caves. It's the story of a young English woman who goes into caves, brings out stalagmites. If you cut them in half, you have growth rings, like tree rings. And you take geologic samples and you can put it in a mass spectrometer and tell what the atmosphere was at a certain period of time. In other words, this person's work is remapping the climate history of the planet over the last half million years. Well, what could be a more perfect story, especially for a science museum IMAX theater, a great contemporary science story, but also we want to take audiences into an environment, places they're probably never going to get to see things they're never going to experience. So taking them into caves, especially underwater caves, was just the perfect subject for the format. It's as though this story, this little science story, is perfect for the format, perfect for the setting of a museum, perfect for what is in essence a 45-minute film. And that's what we were always looking for, is what's the right story with the right places that works for the format, and it works best in this format.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Mike Day, and he's been the executive producer of more than a dozen IMAX film documentaries. He compiles his lessons from traveling the world in his book, The World Has a Big Backyard. You can find out more about Mike in the notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. So, Mike, we were talking about nature documentaries. I'm just dying to see your film about the tropical rainforest. What is the most inspiring natural setting you can recall as a producer when it comes to doing these kind of documentaries?
A couple of places that, you know, I didn't know about before we went looking to make these films. One is the film we did on the Ring of Fire, the southern main island of Kyushu in Japan. You go down to the southern tip to the town of Kagoshima, and you are there at the Sakurajima volcano. This volcano has been in active explosion since the 1950s, and it generally will explode more than once a day. Just the other day, as a matter of fact, I read where there was an ash explosion that went 4 miles into the sky. So the volcano sits in a bay of the East China Sea. Across the bay is the city of Kagoshima. So if you go and check into the Kagoshima Sun Royal Hotel, make sure you ask for a volcano side room so you can sit on your balcony and just watch it. Doing the tropical rainforest film that you mentioned, it was really interesting to go down to Corcovado, a national park in Costa Rica. And at the time we went, there were no roads to get there. The ocean seashore was too rugged to land a boat, so they had cut out a little swatch of the rainforest to land single-engine planes. And when we went there to scout it as a location, you register like you would do at a national park, and you pay your fee. And I went through the registration book. The park had been in existence for 10 years, and the average number of visitors each year was only 300 people. That's a lot less than visit a place like Yellowstone every year. So it was a privilege to be there early in its history and when so few people had been there. But I have to be honest, Rick, Corcovado National Park never ended up in our film. We went there on a scouting trip and determined it would be too hard logistically to bring in a film crew and have to build all the infrastructure to actually shoot at that location. But I got to see it.
What about some of your favorite places that you've filmed that made you want to return without the crew to really, really experience it. Just to wrap up our interview right now, tell me about a place that you worked where you wanted to go back and really do it on your own.
Well, I did a lot of work in Japan, and I always enjoyed the work there, but it's as you described, you are working, which in one respect, you know, immerses you into the culture in a very interesting way, but also at the same time, you'd like to be able to step out of that work mode. Well, the good news is, and I'm a big believer that the best gift you can give, the gift to yourself, the best gift you can give to someone else, and especially the best gift that you can give to young people is travel. So I have a nephew who, my thing with him, starting when he was 8 years old, I was going to take him on a trip every spring break. And the first year I took him to my hometown of Chicago. He lives in St. Paul. Great first place to visit for a kid that age. At age 9, we went to St. Louis. And when he was 10, I figured he was old enough. So I asked him, where would you like to go? And he said, New York or Tokyo? And I said, great. We went to New York when he was 10, and I finally got to Japan, not working, when he was 12, and the two of us went to Tokyo and just had a wonderful travel experience. Now, you talk about travel experiences for young people. You can give them a gift of something, some electronic device, and, you know, it's going to wane the interest over time or wear out. But as you know, travel can provide lifetime memories. And I have to tell you, this 12-year-old kid I took is now in his 20s. We went in March when the cherry blossoms were in bloom. He came to me a couple of weeks ago, and he pulled up his pants leg to show me his new tattoo on his calf. It was a Tokyo palace with a samurai warrior and cherry blossom petals floating down his leg. There's the proof. This thing has created a lifetime memory for him, his trip to where he wanted to go, Japan. So wow. I'm always ready to take a niece or nephew to where they want to go.
My goodness, if everybody had an uncle like Mike Day, I think not only would we have a lot of curious and broad-minded people, but this world would be a better place. And Mike, thanks for bringing the world home so vividly in your work as an IMAX documentary filmmaker.
Thank you, Rick. A pleasure.
Mike Day describes his adventures making IMAX nature documentaries in his memoir, The World Has a Big Backyard. In an earlier visit with us, Mike confessed to being an umbraphile and shared why it's been worth the effort to travel the world to view a total solar eclipse. You can hear that on program number 749 from March of 2024. It's in our show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. Let's check in with listeners next at 877-333-7425. How have your interests and passions helped to design memorable travels overseas? Did they turn into something of a pilgrimage or maybe a scavenger hunt? You can also share your travel reports with us by email to radio@ricksteves.com.